Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and the topic we're going to be talking about today is the power of adversity. And if ever life has kicked you in the teeth, as it has for so many individuals who are struggling so hard, I just got off the phone shortly before our guest came on with someone that is going through a very, very difficult time, and I thought, wow, what an appropriate topic, the power of adversity. My guest today is Al Weatherhead. Al is a man that I've had as a guest before. This book is so timely in more than one way. Al, welcome to the show.
Donna, it's a thrill to be returning at such a happy time of the year, even though we are in the midst of a financial crisis.
Yes, that's true, and adversity is part of the American character, however. We didn't come into the aspect of nationhood because we got patted on our mental popos and said, gee, you're such sweet kids. No, we had to fight for everything, and that seems to be the way that life is. But I want my audience to know a little bit about you, Al. You are the chairman and CEO of Weatherhead Industries in Ohio.
Correct.
And you have been involved as a private manufacturer of plastic closures for food, spice, pharmaceutical, and nutraceutical products. Now, that's like the caps that you, those of you listening, that you see on your spice packages that you buy at various stores where the stuff can shake out, and we'll learn about that story. He's also the president of the Weatherhead Foundation, the founder of the Weatherhead East Asian Institute at Columbia University. He's the founder of the Weatherhead Center for International Affairs at Harvard. He's also founded Weatherhead Pet Center for Preventing and Reversal of Heart Disease. PET is the abbreviation for that. University of Texas, Houston. And it's also the founder of the Weatherhead School of Management at Case Western Reserve University. Gee, I wonder what you do in your spare time. Oh, brother. My goodness.
No, I love it.
You have a real zest for life. But you really had to go through a little bit of crap. Let me put it that way. I'll use a nice word.
That's a nice word.
Yes. A little bit of crap in your life. And you were sort of a rebel at heart, weren't you?
Well, yes. I enjoyed always doing what I thought was the right thing, what was fair, square, and honest. And that's what has led me all of my life.
Now, you had a couple of brothers, and you make a number of comments through your book. The irritants in our lives can stimulate us to create pearls. Well, that brings up a very visual image when you think of the pearl that is started by the irritation of the oyster itself. The pearl is created because the oyster has something in its space that says, I don't like this, so I've got to fix it so that it doesn't bother me too much. And the pearl comes into a place of position and beauty that we admire, but the pearl might consider, the oyster might consider a piece of junk. You really, really have gone through some rugged times. You said you had to learn the hard way. What were some of your hard lessons, Al?
Well, I think the hard lessons... The world is not a bowl of cherries, and if you wish to achieve success, and that is your purpose, really the purpose of life to me, which is God-given, is the opportunity to help others. And that's the way I see everything. That's what I decide to do and say, well, this is just, why not take this opportunity and go and be, make everybody else successful, and then there'll be enough for me to go around for me, and I'll be very healthy and happy, and joyous.
Now, let's talk about your invention, which in 1983, you had already been in business for 12 years, and you said two significant things altered your life and your business dramatically. It was an invention and an affliction. What was the invention?
The invention was the flapper. The flapper closure that opens on one side and you, excuse me, can shake, pour, or sprinkle. And the opposite side is a full opening, and that you can spoon the contents of whatever it is you need. And the audience, bless all of my customers, so I thank them very much from the bottom of my heart. And my affliction was rheumatoid arthritis. And I said, well, why me? Well, I never did anything to anybody to deserve this disastrous disease. And I gripped on to Christian Barnard's biblical, which became a catechism to me in his book on page 31, one in five recover fully from rheumatoid arthritis. And I said, ooh, one in five, that's 20% chance. I think I will follow Christian Barnard. And I had a wonderful doctor, Mike Sheehan, who had faith in me. And we worked together and taking various meds. And he one day looked at me and he said, would you like to swim? And I said, sure. He said, then get your fanny in the swimming pool and swim your way out of this room RA. You can do it. I have faith in you. And that's the encouragement, plus that of my wife, who used to help me in and out of bed and get dressed and to walk in the middle of with rheumatoid arthritis. It took me 55 minutes to walk a mile. So
wow.
That gives the audience a perspective. And 18 months after starting to swim, which I'd done all my life as a young athlete in high school and college, I said, oh, look, I've fully recovered. So it's a matter of faith in people and faith in yourself.
Mm-hmm. Now, with that, part of your story is about your dad. Because he
yes.
was so significant to you, and yet and in fact, let's just talk about your dad for a minute. His company was listed as one of Fortune's top 500. He was a Harvard graduate, a World War I flying ace. He won a Silver Star for Valor. He was an amateur boxing champion. He was a football hero, and he founded his own company with less than $1,000 and ends up being in Fortune 500. And it wasn't done magically overnight, but this was a man who was incredibly successful. And you really wanted to be like him. However, there was a lot of anger inside of you, resentment. Why did you have that feeling about your dad?
Well, that is the way it was portrayed in the book. Actually, it was a very loving, it was a very competitive situation, a relationship that I enjoyed with my father. And he, what is it, 1966, he died. He had pancreatic cancer, and we discovered this when he happened to be en route in Arizona, so we had good doctors there operating on him, and he was able to get another 18 months of life. But it was the 13th of December, 1966, when I called his doctor, who said, let me know, young Al, when he's gotten into the state that he's comatose, and we'll take care of him. So I called, and we took care of him, and that was the end of his life. But I was there for him when he needed me. And looking backwards, it's the relationship was humorous because we were always competing with one another to see if we could, for example, water ski one another, and if we could outthink one another in business. If I had an idea that was better than his, he'd get mad at me, and vice versa. So there was this, it was envy. Mm-hmm. I wanted his. My mother was just absolutely wonderful. Many years ago in the 1950s, I was being critical of my father when I was not working for him and saying, well, he had all of these lovely things in life and so on. She had helped him build the company, and she, who we call the steak and cake lady, my other brothers and I, because she was so doting, cracked me between my shoulders and said, if you want what your father has, then you go out and earn it and work harder than he did, and then you're entitled to it. Otherwise, you're not entitled to a damn thing.
Uh-huh. Good for your mom.
Mom,
we need some more moms like that, cracking the whip and saying those same words to people that think they are entitled, that the world owes them a living. Oh, excuse me. It doesn't happen that way.
No, not yet.
No, we have to. We really do have to earn our way. That is something that enables us to have self-respect and appreciate the value of things, and just that is really something that, I don't know, I would think that most people would have someone around them to make that point, but apparently in today's world, that sense of entitlement is more frequently expected than not.
Right. And we, of course, grew up with the Depression of the 30s, and then we had a World War to fight. So as I've looked back, I said, well, gee, I spent 16 years of my first 20 years of my life untangling messes that other people got into. And I think there's humor in it as I see it now, but I think that was a learning experience that put spunk into us and said, well, look, we can do anything. Just mm-hmm. get out of the way and we'll show you what to do. And That's why I'm chuckling now is we're in a state of financial malaise in this country, and it's because we need to revive the spirit that we had, and it's still within us, to grasp the problem, say, get out of our way, we'll fix everything.
Absolutely true. I agree with you.
Thank you very, very much.
I agree with you. In fact, I was just talking to someone a week ago. I said it would take 5 years, and this country could literally be out of debt if we could get rid of these ding-dongs that don't know squat about business.
Exactly right.
And excuse me, but that's my 5 seconds of opinion. I don't usually get into politics, and this isn't politics.
This is good common sense.
And that's why I think your book, The Power of Adversity, is so timely. Because that is the one thing with the American people, because the American population is so diverse. We come from all over the world, from all walks of life, from all economic levels.
The melting pot of the world.
Absolutely. And a lot of the people that are in this country that work so very, very hard have either had fathers and mothers or other relatives that were immigrants that enabled them to have the privilege of being born in an environment of freedom. But it doesn't mean that it's guaranteed for you. You have to be able to walk the walk, not just talk the talk. You have to be able to participate and understand that life is not fair and you're going to get kicked in the can mentally, physically, spiritually, and emotionally, because that's what happens in life.
Well, you're not born to a bountiful life. People say, oh, yeah, we want money. Well, what are you going to do with money? You can do three things with money. You can spend it, you can give it away, or pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And the accumulation of money is not a venture that's beneficial to you. It doesn't buy you health. You need to work. It doesn't buy you peace of mind. It doesn't buy you happiness. It doesn't buy love. And I can stop there.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen now to love the three R's, that the three R's of longevity, if you want to live to be 100 plus, the three R's of longevity are resolution, resourcefulness, resilience.
Resolution, resourcefulness, and resilience.
I agree
with that.
Well, you would be agreeing with people who were featured in the New York Times, who are 102 and 103, and that was their code. The three R's of getting to be old.
Mm-hmm. Well, but you don't want to just be old and be decrepit.
No.
You want to be old and have quality of life, and you want to be able to share and educate those wonderful points, resolution, resourcefulness, and resilience, with the younger generation, because they're going to have to deal with their own burdens. And again, that's why I like your book so much. Your wife is one of your greatest supporters.
Oh, she's magnificent.
Yeah, she's also one. If you get into your pity party, she doesn't put up with that for very long.
No, not very long. She gives me the freedom of feeling sorry, but then she says, come on, get up and let's get going.
Yes, that's right. So she has really been so supportive of you, and I think that's absolutely marvelous. You make a statement in your book about start mastering your adversity by dealing positively with the smallest problems you encounter, and then scale up that response to effectively deal with the mega adversity in your life.
Right. You do that
What example would you want to use for that for people?
Well, the examples are so numerous, they're countless. And everybody has a problem. Take that problem, put it down on a piece of paper, which I don't do, but that's a suggestion, and mull it over in your mind and say, why is this so awful? It isn't that awful. When I was born, I was not handed a certificate and said, you're going through life without any bumps in the road. Mm-hmm. So I say, what a nice thought. The good Lord has handed me another bump, and he wants to find out how good I am at handling these things, because he's saying, you prove to yourself that you can overcome this bump in the road that I put for you, and once you do that, then you become a stronger and a wiser and a better person. It doesn't necessarily seem so when it's happening, but I don't know if I recounted 2 or 3 years ago when I fractured one of my vertebrae. I had this 7-hour operation to put my back in good shape, and I have two titanium rods and all the nuts and screws in my back now, and so I go around that way. And the doctor said, look, if you want to recover, you will recover and get better. It's up to you. You need to go do two things. You need to go to work every day, and you need to exercise, 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 exercise. So I'm on the treadmill 30 to 40 minutes a day, 4 or 5 times a week, and when I'm not doing that, I'm swimming.
Mm-hmm.
So is it self-discipline? No. It's a desire to live a healthy life.
Mm-hmm.
A happy life, a loving life.
Absolutely. Now, you also make a comment about how important it is to have fun moving forward and addressing the inevitable mistakes that we're going to have occur, that we're going to make as they come up, but not obsess about dead ends or what might go wrong in the future. That bit of wisdom, I think, is so important. I can remember times and there's various things that, you can go into and think, oh, my goodness, and you're thinking the worst-case scenario. You listen to the news, you hear about so many things, and you go, oh, my goodness, it's going to happen to me. And there's a saying, if you focus on what you don't want, that's what you're going to end up getting.
Right.
It's almost like where you put your energy, that's where the result is going to come from. That's what's going to evolve. And this is something that you had to learn about, that you learned how to let go of those dead ends that didn't need to be carried anymore. I mean, some people carry their dead ends around like banners of honor. And I just said, get past it. Move on. That's dead stuff.
I agree. Because it's too much of a load. That's a long bag of trash that they're hauling behind you. And as every year goes by, then they add to that long bag of trash, as I think somebody struggling down the road, that individual has enough to do today and not have to carry all that big bag of you-know-what.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it this way, that every adversity carries with it the seed of an equal or greater benefit. And I think, I better live by that one. I like that one.
I think that is a very good attitude. Now, your dad, when you ended up being in involvement with a new management at his company, we're going to go back, we're going to backstep
sure.
a little bit here. You found that the company that your dad had, the people that had come into positionings of authority, they didn't know how to run the company, they were accountants, and they had ended up with the controlling shares of the company, and where you knew what could be done, these people said, no, we're going to do it our way. There are so many of our listeners I know that have either worked for people that have had a company take over or something has gone wrong. People coming in, they don't understand it. Maybe they bought the company out, or they say, we're going to take it over and run it the way we want to run it. And that is really very discouraging. But that was something that enabled you then to get into your company doing the things the way you need to do it, correct?
Yes. And what I've always done all my life, since I was 3 years old and used to go with my dad to his factory, I have spent time with people, because infrastructure and all this other, a company is all about people. Any idiot can put up a building, a great big factory, and they can put all kinds of machinery in it, but if they don't have the understanding of the people, then, and they can't go to the people, as I have always done, what's our problem? Let's see if we can solve it. One of the early experiences in my own company was that one of the girls from the shop came into my office, and she said, damn it, you come out here and look at this. I said, okay, what's wrong? You said, you see this assembly belt? I said, yes. And she said, they're not the little grooves that help carry the product up because it's so light, we didn't want it tumbling back on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
She said, they're missing. Now, damn it, tell them, maintenance people, to fix this machine. What's wrong with you? Don't you know how to run a company? And this is what I really invite. And mm-hmm. I love that interchange, because it's going, okay, we can do this, and that's all right. You find a better way to do it, I'm happy to do it. It's your way. You know more about this than I do. So what I see today is, in a way, abysmal, because these people that buy companies are manipulating figures. They're analysts, and they mm-hmm. hire one of the big companies that you see advertised on TV is Accenture, and it's a consulting company, and they companies hire Accenture and say, give me a report on what's going on in the factory floors. And I chuckle over that. I said, why don't these fellows in the upper echelons of management just go out and spend a week or two walking around on the floor, and sitting down and having lunch or going out to dinner with the factory folk, say, what do we need to do here? They
mm-hmm.
have all the answers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because they're hands-on. They're dealing with it day in and day out.
Exactly. He comes back to our dismal recounting of what's going on. With the government, we can tell you what to do. Just
sure. Sure.
So we can stop there.
Right. Absolutely. Now, I like what you say, and you have a quote in here from Alcoholics Anonymous. It's one
right.
of their meditations. You say, be expectant. Constantly expect better things. Believe that what God has in store for you is better than anything you ever had before. A good life is a growing, expanding life with ever-widening horizons, an ever greater circle of friends and acquaintances, and an ever greater opportunity for usefulness.
Sure.
Right there, those words, if they were put up on a wall in front of someone and they read that every morning and every evening before they went to bed, that is something that I call mental nutrition.
Thank you. But it
that is.
That is
mental nutrition.
Well, as we spoke in last time and any time, the going to AA, which I started doing in 1966, was one of the better experiences I had in my life. The camaraderie, the understanding, the interchange, the exchange, the willingness to be open with people and say, oh, yes, I was an alcoholic. Well, I'm still an alcoholic, but I'm recovering. Yes. It's God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
If we'd perhaps tattoo that someplace and see it all the time on ourselves, we wouldn't be feeling sorry. And
mm-hmm.
sorry is a poor word.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't have pity parties.
That's right. I'd say pity party potty. Okay, there we go. Yeah, I mean, say that three times and you'll be laughing like a fool at yourself because you can't even wrap your mouth around those three words all together, no matter how you arrange them.
Right.
You have a quote in your book, if you want to forget all your other troubles, wear too tight of shoes. Wow, I can agree with that heartedly. I did that just recently, and you don't think about anything else but your feet.
Exactly right.
It's sort of like trying to step back into old patterns, which I did. I had on a pair of shoes that I thought, oh, they look just so cool in this outfit. Haven't worn them for years, and I've remembered why. But anyway, that's a real cute quote. I like it. But you have five tips that I liked. You said have the right idea about money, always get the facts, think positively, treat time as a resource, give of yourself time and money to others less fortunate. And this is something that you yourself have worked with, and you also say where there's no safety left and no security, then remember, you're never alone. You and God are a team.
Absolutely. And I thought that for many years, learned that. It takes time to get it through my thick skull at times, but fortunately become a bit aware of these things. I know as I was swimming along, and I said, well, gee, this is nice. I was in an outdoor pool. Well, you can do it anywhere, but it so happened. I thought, well, I've got a pal with me. It's the good Lord, and I can have a nice chat with him about whatever it is that is on my mind that needs to be resolved. And so I've enjoyed that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's up to each and everyone should believe in the good Lord as they understand him, as we say in AA. Believe in God as you understand him.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the freedom of any and all religions or even non-religions.
Mm-hmm. I want to share a quote out of your book. You have in your ninth chapter, you're talking about how you, when you're in your factory and you just listen to its rhythm, you feel that rhythm is its heartbeat. And you say the rhythm, the heartbeat of a company is individuals, the people who work within its walls. It's repeating just what you said a moment ago. But you also say much of what is wrong in a good deal of current business theory and practice is its failure to recognize that the heart of any factory beats to the rhythms of its employees. The bottom line must not be profit, because profit can only come as a fruit of the health and dreams of the human endeavor the factory represents. Management's responsibility then is to cultivate within the workplace an environment that lends itself to creativity, dreams, and a collective spirit larger than the sum of its paychecks and mechanical parts. Your words are very powerful. Your story is terrific. The Power of Adversity is written for anyone to read, and I'd say for a young person as well as a mature person. Challenges are present always. They never go away. But we are in times where we need innovation. We need people that really want to get back to the heart of what is really important in life and that is productivity and being able to be in passion with whatever their dream might be, knowing that it has a place and that it's worth pursuing and having the freedom to do so. Al Weatherhead, your website, and I know we're out of time, powerofadversity.net, powerofadversity.net is your website, and people can find out all kinds of information there. Tough times can make you stronger, wiser, and better. Thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you so much, Donna. You are a true sweetheart, and I love you and wish you a Merry Christmas and a healthy, healthy New Year.
Thank you, Al. The same to you and your wonderful family. Donna Sebo here. The power of adversity. If you want to give a gift to someone that is having a tough time and want to be able to send them into the new year with a sense of purpose and hope, this is a book that you should buy for yourself first and then get an extra copy to give to a friend. Donna Sebo, we're taking a break. The Power of Adversity, Al Weatherhead. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Rio. I'm the author of the cutting-edge book, Hooked on Raw. I want to give you and your loved ones the gift of optimum health. So when you order my book, Hooked on Raw, which has over 350 delicious, healthy recipes, I'll include my new DVD, What's Not Cooking in Rio's Kitchen, for a half price. Just go to my website, rawfoodinfo.com, and click on Holiday Special. That's rawfoodinfo.com. Click on Holiday Special.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And, hey, those telephone lines are open. If you'd like to call me at 888-815-9756, those telephone lines are open, and I'd be delighted to give you a reading on the air, and all I need is your first name or initial. Of course, I'd love to know where you're calling in from. 888-815-9756. Okay, perfect for this time of the year. I know you're all just going to be so excited to be, to find out about David Fetter, because we're going to be talking about the skinny carbs diet. Here we are in the middle of the holiday season, and we're saying skinny carbs. You have got to be kidding. Nope. David is going to be on the air with us tomorrow, so we're going to be talking about his particular recommendations for a food program that may not end up putting, you know, the old adage, a minute on the lips, or maybe it's a second and a half on the lips and, you know, 24 years on the hips. Okay, we're going to try to dispel a little bit of that. And then on Thursday, this is very, very appropriate, it's Romantic Christmas Stories of the Old West. Murray Neighbors is going to be my guest. This was a book, when it crossed my desk, like the information about it, I said, oh, this is just so wonderful. Believe it or not, when I start getting ready for the holidays and picking guests, sometimes I don't have much in the way of material regarding the holidays. And this came in, and it was just perfect. And, of course, on Friday, it's Christmas Eve day, but I'm going to be busy preparing for my house full of people that will be here on Christmas, and Christmas is Saturday. So Friday, we're going to be doing the Donna Sebo Christmas special, and I think you will find it just wonderful. There's all kinds of stories, and it's traditional with the Donna Sebo show that we do this special with you. So I hope that you will share it with your family and your friends, because it's a wonderful program. But that's the lineup, and boy, oh boy, I can't believe how busy we are. You know, before Al came on the show, I had mentioned during the interview that before I had gotten on the phone with him, I had just gotten off of doing a phone call with someone that I know is in another state. And this person has gone through the devastating experience of losing their home. This just happened to them 2 weeks ago. And whenever you go through challenges like this, and this person had been waging a very fierce battle, so I'll be talking with him further this evening, but very, very hard times. And you know what happens? And this person had done the same patterning. Often when we're going through very, very dark times, when we are in the positioning of watching maybe something that we've had, like this person had had their home for 23 years, it was taken away from them. You have this feeling of being so alone. Then there's this feeling of being embarrassed or shamed. You say, oh, it shouldn't have happened to me. This is terrible. And that's why I really was delighted to have Al on today. I thought it was just synchronistic. One of the things that's very, very hard, if you are an independent individual and you say, by God, I'm going to make it regardless. Now, that's a wonderful feeling. But, you know, sometimes you need to ask for help. Sometimes you need to let people know that something is wrong. And that was one of the most difficult things for me to learn. And I can't say that it's easy for me even today, but it's a lot easier than it was years ago. Why? Because we think we need to weather things all by ourselves. And that's not the case. You don't need to be wailing and moaning and going into being a drama king or queen. That's not necessary. But there are people, when they know you need help, you have to ask for it. And if you don't ask, you don't get. And it took me years to learn that. And there are people that I know that I love dearly. They are as obstinate as an oak tree. They say, this is the way it is, and by God, I'm going to go through this. No, you don't have to. And it doesn't mean you're weak. Because if you're a person that is resourceful and you need help, you ask for help. It may not be handed to you on a silver platter. You're going to have to work for results, just like Al did about talking about his health concerns. He asked for the help, and he got the instruction, and then he had to carry it through. And that's what we have to do. That's what we have to do. I have a story I'll share with you quickly, and this was one of my counseling sessions when I had worked as an assistant minister. And for those of you that are not aware of it, I am a minister. I've never had a church, but I often would assist in different environments with people. This young teenager came in to see me, and she was just distraught. The minister of the church that she knew well, he wasn't available, and he asked me if I would work for this young girl, and I said yes. She came in. She was articulate. She was well-dressed. She presented herself with such a maturity and such a poise. I was wondering, my goodness, what in the world is the concern of this little girl? Not little girl, really. She's a young girl. And when we were talking, I just listened, and she just spilled out the story of her life. Apparently, her mother had been, for most of this young girl's life, on welfare. And this was a woman that would read positive things. She'd go to church on Sunday. She would, you know, make sure she tithed a certain amount of money, and she'd go home, and that was it. Well, as her daughter was growing up, for some reason, her daughter was a very resourceful personality. She went to school, she got straight A's, she was an excellent student, and nobody had to force this girl to do anything. She wanted to do it. But as she got older, she would question her mother. Why do we have to live this way? Why do we have to go through certain things? And her mother would give excuses. Well, here this young girl, she's 14 years old. She's sitting in front of me, and she's mad. She's furious. She's gained a scholarship for college at that young age. She is ready to go to work at 14. And she's telling me all of these things about her mother and their lifestyle, and she said, I hate it. And my mother will quote all kinds of things, and I got so mad the other day, I watched her, she's sitting in a rocking chair in front of the television. And her mother was not that old an individual. This is a woman in her 30s. So she's sitting in front of the television, and she's making comments about what she's seeing on television, and her daughter looked at her and she said, you are on welfare. Why in the world don't you go out and get a job? We have these things that need to be taken care of. And her mother would spout, well, the good Lord will provide, the good Lord will provide. And she just blew up at her mother. So she was upset because she had lost her temper with her mother. Well, I just said to her, I said, you're wonderful. You're a wonderful example for your mom. I don't know that you can change your mom because she has become acclimated to a certain pattern in her life, and for some reason, you got all the resourcefulness that she's supposed to have. You've got it because you're self-motivating and you're doing all of these wonderful things for yourself. Not many young people can say that they have been given a scholarship at the young age that you have been. You should be very proud of what you have accomplished. And she said to me, but I'm so upset with her. She won't get up. She won't go out. She won't do anything. She just sits in that rocking chair and says, oh, it's all going to work out. If I think positive, something's going to come up. She said, no, but mother, nobody's going to come up to the door and say, hi, I've been looking for you for 20 years. It's not going to happen. By the time we ended up finishing our conversation, I like to think that this young lady realized that she could not change her mother, but she could move forward in her own way. And that it was something that her mother had made a choice about for whatever reason. But that she was the example and that she could go forward having a very productive life, being a source, perhaps, of inspiration to her mother. But her mother was an example, a serious example, of what she didn't want. Sometimes life puts us in situations that we can get very angry with and get very upset with and even blame them for where we are. But somewhere, somehow, we have to make a choice about our own individual space. What are we going to represent? How are we going to represent it? This is a choice we make. If we have certain areas of weakness, what can we do to pull them up? If we focus on our strengths, we then will have the dynamics to be able to move forward, and we'll find that what we considered a weakness was eventually just incorporated in to that area of strength that we love so much. But we'll learn how to work with people. And that's what you need to remember. I like, and it was in my last newsletter, I believe, tough times don't last, tough people do. And I said, I like the word resilience. Resilient people last. And when Al quoted his three R's, resolution, resourcefulness, and resilience, those are three words that you should put somewhere that you can look at on a daily basis. It is something that will empower you and will enable you as an individual to move forward in your life. You know, sometimes there are twists and turns in the road that lead us into directions we would never have imagined we could even consider. You never know what you are going to find that needs you tremendously. I know of a businessman who was laid off of a job positioning, and what happened is that he ended up volunteering, doing work for someone, and ended up discovering that he had talents he had not even given consideration to. and ended up being in an environment that was very suitable for him. I know of another man who lost everything. I've known this. I just got off the phone, like I said to you, with a woman who's lost everything that she's had for 23 years. Life happens. There are no straight lines. And the only thing that really works is when we understand we're part of this magnificent experience of life. And like Al said in his book, The Power of Adversity, when you can look at it and say, there's something here, there's a gold nugget in here somewhere. I don't know how I'm going to find it, but I'm going to find it. And even if you do volunteer work, involving yourself with other people, you will find that you're going to be needed in a very special way. So, don't get involved in your pity party potty. Get out of it. It is not worth staying there. Set a timer. Make it for 15 minutes and wail and moan and, you know, have your full drama. When that timer goes off, you say, okay, that's it. Got to do something else. Go on scrub floors. Do something. But remember, it's always, always up to you as an individual to make your choices. And I believe in you, and you're needed. You're needed. I'm so glad you're with me today. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. When I come back, oh, I've got a chocolate recipe. How about some Florentine cookies? Woohoo! Perfect for the holidays. But more than that, I've got a wonderful story about a hug for Santa. So when we come back, I'll be sharing that with you. 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com. Each week, we interview guests and cover topics you won't hear on mainstream radio. Get informed, healthy, and involved. RawEnergyRadio.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, I know I shouldn't do it, but I'm going to give you this recipe for Florentine cookies. Or you can also give me a call at 888-815-9756. Uh-oh, I forgot to tell you, deadline for getting into your story about your metaphysical or spiritual experience, being out of the body or ghost stories or whatever you've got, because my deadline date is January the 2nd. We're trying to take the stories that we've compiled and put that all together, and that's going to be submitted to a publishing house. But I'd love to have your story. So for this particular book, the first one that we're going to be working on, I'd love to hear from you. Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. And don't forget, if you've missed any of the shows, go into the show information on the bbsradio.com Station 1 website and just touch it and find out who's coming up. I don't have the list for January yet. We've already got people booked in January, but I haven't had the opportunity to go in and do that. Okay, have you got your pad of paper handy and a pen? These are yummy little cookies. People will think that you have spent hours doing these, and it doesn't take long at all. Okay, you're going to need to have a third of a cup of butter, third of a cup of butter, a third of a cup of superfine sugar, third of a cup of superfine sugar, 2 tablespoons of golden raisins, 2 tablespoons of golden raisins, 2 tablespoons of chopped candied cherries, and also 2 tablespoons of candied ginger chopped. Mm-hmm. Sounding good? Oh, wait till you get the rest. 1/4 cup of sunflower seeds. You're going to need 3/4 cup of slivered almonds and 2 tablespoons of heavy cream and 6 ounces of dark. Or you could have milk chocolate, too. But I like the dark. That's really good. Now, this is what you need to do. You have to lightly grease and flour 2 cookie sheets. And I'd recommend lining them with baking parchment. That's what I like to do with my cookies. You want to place the butter, about 1/3 cup of butter, into a small pan, and you want to heat it gently until it melts, or just stick it in a microwave for heaven's sake. But it needs to be in glass, obviously, in a microwave, and just nuke it for 15 seconds. Add to the sugar, and you stir. Of course, it's going to need to go on top of the stove to dissolve the sugar. You want to stir the sugar into the butter until it's dissolved, and bring it then to a boil. You remove it from the heat and stir in the golden raisins, the cherries, the ginger, the sunflower seeds, and the almonds. You mix it well, and then you beat in the cream. And what you're going to do, you're going to place small teaspoons of the fruit and nut mixture under your prepared cookie sheets. And you want to make sure that you have plenty of space between them because the mixture is going to spread and get very thin. You bake it in a preheated oven at 350 degrees. It'll take anywhere from 10 to 12 minutes. You need to watch them carefully because you don't want them to get real dark. They're going to turn a golden brown. And you remove them from the oven. And while they're still hot, use a circular cookie cutter to pull in the edges to form a perfect round, if you like. And that's while they're hot. You just need to do that. Let the cookies cool and crisp. They're going to get real crispy before you remove them from the cookie sheet. So just let them cool right on the cookie sheet. Now, you're going to need then to melt most of the chocolate, and you're going to want to spread the chocolate on a sheet of baking parchment. When the chocolate is just about getting firm, it's at the point of setting, you put the cookies flat side down on the chocolate and allow the cookie to harden right along with the chocolate itself. So what you do then, you take and cut around the Florentines and remove them from the paper. Spread a little bit more chocolate on the coated side of the Florentines and use a fork to make little waves, you know, little squiggly marks. Let it set, and you have got some yummy cookies. I mean, my goodness, if you're going to have good stuff, have good stuff. Don't flinch on quality ingredients. They're beautiful, and they make a nice little gift. Okay, and I also had a quick Santa story for you. This one is by a wonderful person. It's Patrick Murphy. He said he remembered Christmas as a child because he was very, very poor, and his parents, he loved them dearly. But he said he never asked for gifts because he knew that his family didn't have very much, and it took everything that they had to take care of what was needed. And his parents, they didn't have good health. They didn't have much of an education. And he said asking for gifts was just too much of a financial strain on them. And he said, I just couldn't see my dad taking an extra job to pay for toys that I really didn't need. So people would wonder what he would want, but his parents, when they'd say, what's your Christmas wish for Santa this year? He said, nothing, I just like to hug Santa. Well, he ends up going seeing Santa at a Sears store, and he had been waiting in the long line for hours, and he'd get up on his lap, and Santa would always ask him, what would you like for Christmas, young man? And he'd say, nothing, Santa, I just wanted to see you and to hug you. And he said, for many Christmases, the Santa Clauses were just stunned. And often, they would turn to the other children waiting in line and say, nothing. Did you hear that, kids? this young man doesn't want anything for Christmas. He said, but it was true. He said, I grew up not wanting anything material. I really didn't care what I received or if I received anything at all. What I most wanted was to have my family together and to hug Santa. On Christmas Eve, I'd go outside and look up into the cold night sky, watching the stars, hoping to see Santa in his sleigh and wishing with all my heart that he would come to my house and spend the whole night playing with me under the tree. This was my idea of a great Christmas, having my family together and hugging Santa. This is Donna Sebo. I know we're out of time. Be back with you tomorrow, same time, same place. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. We'll be talking with you tomorrow. Have a great time. Enjoy your shopping. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.